Arnold. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 200. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Once a week, I interview a well-known expert from the fields of personal development, education, career and life planning, and other disciplines who share experiences, tools, and insights to help our listeners along their journeys. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured expert, Dr. Paul White. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be here.
Thank you, sir. It's nice to be with you again. Dr. Paul White is a psychologist, speaker, and consultant who makes work relationships work. Co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, and Sink or Swim, Dr. White's expertise has been cited in Bloomberg's Business Week, Entrepreneur.com, Fast Company, FoxBusiness.com, and U.S. News & World Report, Yahoo Finance, and numerous other publications. His clients include Fortune 250 companies, federal government agencies, international nonprofit organizations, numerous medical institutions, and over 250 colleges and universities. Paul, today's topic is how to survive a toxic workplace, which regrettably seems to be an increasing problem out there in the world. Set the table for us and just define the topic so listeners can get their head around it.
Sure. So actually, the way this came about was, you know, I've written with Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages. We wrote a book on the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. And while going out and speaking and training on that, I would have people come up at breaks and afterwards and tell me stories about how bad their workplace was and what a jerk their boss was and that kind of stuff. And it just sort of surprised me and overwhelmed me. I mean, all this negative feedback I was getting. So we wound up doing some research, and we have about 55,000 people on our e-newsletter list. And so I sent out an invitation for people to write and tell stories. Well, we got hundreds and hundreds of stories that we then wound up following up and interviewing people, and wrote a book called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, and then have continued to work. And it's unfortunate how negative some workplaces seem to be. And, you know, most people don't know whether their workplace is toxic or not. I mean, it's sort of like, yeah, work is tough, or, you know, this is hard, but how bad is it? And so we actually, one of the first things we did is develop a little assessment tool called the Ratings of Toxic Symptoms Scale to get a sense, is this normal work? Is this, you know, bad? Is it really unhealthy, or is it sort of deadly? Because we don't know. And then to look at the areas that sort of make up a toxic place and then help people deal with it. I'm not about making people into victims where, oh, me, oh, you know, woe is me kind of thing. But, you know, what can you do either to help make things better or to decisions you have to make for yourself?
Can you take us through how the ratings are categorized or what the various levels of toxicity in the workplace are?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, it is just like sort of normally stressful work, unhealthy, dangerous, and then deadly, you know, and we look at it across a variety of symptoms, including communication patterns, manipulation, decision making, focus on image, negative work environment, and so forth. And so what we do is we identify the top three that the person reports on and then give them resources to be able to access other author books and websites. You know, let's say it's about critical communication and that kind of stuff. What's been interesting, sort of the to net it out, is that really we found sort of three key pieces that make a place really nasty. Okay. One is if they have what I would call a sick system, so that, you know, just structurally there's not good communication patterns. People do indirect stuff, or there's not much communication going on, or there's distortion and lying and deceit. And then also how decisions are made and whether that includes people that should be or not. And another key element is whether or not people actually follow the policies and procedures. You know, I work with some smaller businesses, family-owned businesses that, you know, often they don't necessarily have policies and procedures really well laid out. Lots of times it's pretty informal. And so depending who you call and talk to, you may get a different answer from one day or time of day to the next on what the response is. But more often in with larger organizations, hospitals and corporations and universities, there are so many rules and regulations, people couldn't follow them all if they wanted to. And so they sort of pick and choose, and then you have a real inconsistency. So that sick system is sort of a foundational piece. There's then a piece of toxic leaders. And one of the interesting things about toxic leaders is they don't have to be at the top of the organization. They can be sprinkled throughout. I mean, they might be sort of secondary leaders or then even over just smaller departments or whatever. And we can talk about what that looks like. It's not just being incompetent, but it's worse than that. And then the third part is having dysfunctional colleagues. You know, I'm a psychologist by training, and so I tend to really try to avoid, you know, terms and diagnostic categories. And so dysfunctional, we really mean in the sense of it being descriptive. DYS means problem, like dyslexia is problems with words. And dysfunctional is people that have a hard time functioning in reality. Hmm. And there's some patterns around that, you know, people that blame and make excuses and don't take responsibility. So when you have those three components involved, the sick systems, the toxic leaders, and dysfunctional colleagues, it can be a pretty nasty place to work.
Good heavens, I can just imagine. Well, and then the pressures on organizations, it's always been harsh. It's always been pressure-packed, especially in the competitive workplace of America. But nowadays, you turn around and you read a cover story on Fortune, or actually it was the New York Times, about Amazon. I'm sure you read that, and how Amazon, in its Bezos's desire to you know, have a really great company and an efficient company, it seems as though, anyway, from the observers, just push the envelope just to the nth degree, where the premium is just on performance, I won't say at all costs, but almost at all costs. I read a rebuttal about that from another consulting firm, and they were just questioning the wisdom of it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a tension in our culture these days, sort of two ends of the continuum. There's sort of for lack of a better term, and I'll probably offend some people, but what I would call sort of the California self-esteem school, where, you know, we just want people to feel good about stuff.
Right.
And that is true, but work is about work. It's about providing goods or services that people want or need and are willing to pay for. And so you got to get stuff done, and you got to do it a quality way and get it to them and, you know, make a profit. When I talk about appreciation in the workplace or toxic workplaces, the goal isn't just to make people feel good. That's not the goal. The goal is to develop a healthy organization that can achieve the goals and missions that it has. Mm-hmm. But then you have the flip side of sort of the really high level, what I call performance recognition people, that it's all about performance, and people begin to feel really like a work unit or a machine. It's like they only hear good things, or only the only thing that matters is how much you got done and did you do it in a profitable way. And you don't really even almost exist as a person. It's you're just a, you know, another resource for them to use to get to their goal, usually a financial goal. So there's a tension there.
One of the other pieces I read recently was that even in Silicon Valley, even in the high tech hub centers of the world, the premium, at least from this one writer's perspective, the premium, which has always been on knowledge and technology for sure, but the premium today is on the emotional intelligence side, or particularly on this word called empathy, and the idea of creative teams and communication and collaboration. One of the techies they interviewed at a really big company said, when we onboard clients, we have 12 meetings. And 10 of those meetings, two of those meetings are about technology and the other 10 are about relationships.
Yeah. Well, you know, clients, our customers are people typically, or groups of people. And so, you know, those of us in the workplace can get so task oriented that we forget that what we're trying to do is provide a good or service that our customer wants. And so we have to make sure that we're giving them what they want. And I talk to my team that, you know, when somebody calls and inquires about our resources or me speaking for them, we're not just going to give them what they ask for, because that may not be what they need. I mean, it's not an upselling thing. It's more like, you may not need us or this, or you may not need this higher level service, and this other more moderate, it would be sufficient for you. But to help them clarify what their real needs and goals are, and then whether and how we can meet those needs. Yeah, communication is key. I mean, I talk to, you know, as I'm talking to groups about toxic workplaces and so forth, the worst kind of communication is no communication, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because then you just don't know. And for whatever reason, our human tendency is to fill in the negative when we're not sure. So no news is not good news. No news leads to anxiety and worry because people don't know what's up, and then they fill in the bad. We need to communicate, and I strongly advocate for honest, direct communication. That's sort of a hallmark symptom of a toxic workplace is indirect communication, mm-hmm. or clearly, you know, dishonest or distorted information when they're putting a spin on stuff that's not really true about either the product or services. You know, that just does not go well. It's hard to have trust in your coworkers and integrity in relationships if you feel like, you know, people are lying to the clients or the public.
Right, right. And then your whole client base is tainted because they don't trust you.
Absolutely.
So can you talk about the three key toxic pieces just in a little more depth, the six system, the toxic leaders, and the dysfunctional colleagues?
Yeah. So with the six systems, I mean, it really is about communicating, and that's different than, you know, sit down, shut up, and listen. You know, it's communicating meaning and making sure there's understanding occurring, which requires, you know, a listening aspect and a feedback aspect. And people forget that there's different kinds of messages that are sent. And, you know, there's facts, and that's largely what business is about. But there's also people's feelings about what's going on and the personal meaning. But the part that gets missed is sort of underneath the surface, and it's an applied relationship message. In other words, if I come in to your office and let's say you work for me and I say, you know, the report is late, you know, that's just a fact. Now, I could say it with a certain amount of feeling or whatever, but the real message is, what am I implying relationally? Like, the report is late. Where is it, dude? You better get it to me in the next 5 minutes. I didn't say that, but it could be implied. And that's where people get into trouble, is not clarifying and bringing that up to the surface and living, and then sort of never gets said. And then people wind up sort of ping-ponging off of each other's implied messages. And that's where you just get out into the left field. It's like, well, I never said that. Well, I know, but I know you meant this. And then, you know, then bad decisions are made. So
yes, exactly.
You know, you've got to have accurate information to make good decisions, and accurate information comes from hopefully effective communication. Mm-hmm. And I would say really a key part with regards to the toxicity is just how negative communication can get. And I just actually just got through doing a training session for a nonprofit organization this morning, and we were talking about this, and, you know, how do you turn a negative environment around? Well, the first thing is you don't join the negativity. Mm-hmm. If there's a group of people over there gritching and complaining and all that, you don't go there. Or if you're there and it starts, you just excuse yourself and say, hey, I'm going to catch you guys later. You don't have to call them out on it necessarily. Mm-hmm. But you just leave. And then the second part is to communicate some positive things, you know, and whether that's just positive about life, about being grateful for different things, or in our context, we teach people how to communicate authentic appreciation to one another so that people feel valued for what they do. And, you know, it's not rocket science. Most of the stuff that I work with is not that tough conceptually, but it's, you just got to quit doing the negative and focus more on the positive and figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The toxic leaders, we'll go there.
Sure.
A toxic leader is different than an incompetent leader. A toxic leader really is somebody that they're all about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about them. They're narcissistic. They think they're God's gift to mankind. They are better than everybody else. They know what's better. And one of the interesting things we've had about toxic leaders is that they actually look good initially. Otherwise, why would you hire them or advance them, right? Mm-hmm. So they have some skills, and often they're very socially skilled and verbally skilled. And they can spin a good story, but the problem is that whatever they're doing, they're very task and goal oriented. But it's not necessarily about the organization's goals. It's about their goals,
mm-hmm.
which may or may not go inside the organization, but about their advancement, about, you know, their rewards. And so they're driven. And so everything is about meeting your goals. So what happens is they wind up using and manipulating people. People just become resources to get to the goals. They, you know, are lie and are deceitful. They are condescending because it is about them. If there's anything good that happens in their mind, it's because of them, and they will take credit for it.
Yes.
But they're very good at being sort of a Teflon leader, that nothing bad sticks to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they manipulate information as well. They're very controlling of information so that who knows what and when it gets, you know, sort of shared and in what way can be a way that they sort of manipulate the situation and their image. That's the other thing. They're really focused on image.
Yes, exactly.
They don't care whether things work or not. They just want to sell it. They want.
I read a book in the last year. I'm interested in. Is it psychopathy or psychopathology? Is that just two different ways to say the same thing?
It's psychopathology.
Yeah, I'm interested in the. I don't know, just as a human being, but I read this book and a lot of studies have been done on this. And this one series of studies at Yale said that 4% of the people, you know where I'm headed. In the world are sociopaths, and that's that. Well, sociopaths and narcissists.
Right.
You know that stuff far better than I. But they're cut out of the same cloth. They're different but similar. But they're still highly manipulative. And what's in it for me? And then 63% are good people that pretty much like to be told what to do. That's harsh but true. And then the other 30 some odd percent are people who sort of like to make their own decisions. So if you look at the workplace, does that ring true with the research you've read? Is that true at all?
I don't know. I mean, it sort of fits with my personal experience and view of reality. I think that's pretty true. Yeah, and it's important to know that, you know, there aren't that many toxic leaders out there proportionally, but I mean, there are a lot of people, and so there can be a number of people that are toxic. And like I said, they don't have to be at the top of the organization, but they can really ruin an organization. And another interesting characteristic about toxic leaders, at least effective ones in one sense, is that not only do they look good at the beginning, they
yes.
sort of use things for their own means, but then they know when to get out, and they get out before things crash. They can often hop from one organization to the next, sort of citing and misrepresenting, you know, what they did, and if they look good, 6 months later, you know, things come tumbling down, but it's too late. And so, and let me just say this because I think it's important, is if you work for somebody that's sort of like this, it's really important to understand and fully believe they are all about themselves. And the implication is you have to take care of yourself because they're not going to.
Right.
If something bad goes, you're going down, not them.
Right.
And so if you work for a nasty kind of person, you've got to, first of all, do your job, you know, and then secondly, you got to document it. And that can mean, like, in meetings, or let's say if you have a one-on-one with them, the way to do that is to follow up with an email and say, okay, this is my understanding, what we agreed on to do, and now my responsibilities, yada, yada. And if it's different than that, please let me know so that you've got that sort of in writing, because otherwise it's a he said, she said.
How does one know? Because I've been in business 40 years and had clients at all different levels of the Fortune 100 and so forth. And so and clients and associates and allies. So, you know, run across a bunch of people, and some of the people that you were describing here fall into that group. Now, I've never had to work for anybody, but if I did, I think it would be very, very challenging. And in fact, I don't see any other strategy but to get the heck out of there, do that, because the person that's got these issues, they're not going to change. You're just at their beck and call, and they're going to use you until they don't need you anymore. They're going to use you till they move on to somewhere else. What do you say to people out there listening?
So here's the deal. You're exactly right. I mean, part of it is that they're sort of like spin a web, right? You know,
yes.
But also, you get in a fog. And here's the deal. It's like when you start to question yourself and you thought you knew what was right and this is the right thing to do, but they're saying, you know, really it's okay to sort of, you know, schmooze this a little bit or whatever. You've got to have somebody outside that you can use as a sounding board and sort of an objective, wise counselor.
Okay.
And say, you know, this is sort of what's going on. And this is what I thought, but this is what I'm thinking. And now I don't know how to think about it. And because you start to lose your perspective on it and you just get confused.
Yes.
And depending on how good they are or how strong they are and what kind of personality, I mean, you can get sort of snookered and,
yeah,
and, you know, you're left holding the bag. And so it's really important, first of all, to sort of pay attention to those signs, those things that don't make sense. You know, this sort of doesn't add up. They say this, but that, and how does that work? I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't discount those. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to go hire the FBI, you know, but it's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, make a note about this and just hold on to it. And often things will start to add up, but you've got to have an external person to help you think through things and think wisely so that they can counsel you on what potential actions to take.
Yeah. And I guess tactically and strategically, if you're at a firm, whether it's a professional firm like a law firm or some other professional services firm, an accounting firm or an engineering firm, I guess you just have to weigh the, it's a cost reward thing, a cost benefit thing. You know, just if you're working for a powerful person who happens to be one of the more manipulative ones, you just have to weigh how long you can stand that and
yes,
how long it works for you. And then when it's time to leave and just keep your options open, right?
Well, and really you have to work on an exit plan sort of
right,
you know, underneath. And the thing you don't want to do, this is when you know you're in trouble, is when you keep making really sort of bad decisions for the sake of the organization.
Okay.
Because the organization is there to survive on its own, and it will do it with or without you, and
right,
it will take everything. So you've got to sort of stay true to your principles and your guiding values. And when you're, you know, sort of crossing over the line on those in order to help the organization, that's like a flashing red warning. We got some radiation in the air, because yeah, that's when you're going down, and you will go down with the organization, or it'll take you out. So
right, exactly. Okay. Oof, toxic leaders. Okay, let's talk about dysfunctional colleagues.
It's always somebody else, isn't it, Don? It's never us.
Right, right. I hope so.
But, you know, we're all dysfunctional at some point.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so we have growth areas. But really, dysfunctional colleagues are those people that just really don't function according to the rules of reality. They don't tell the truth. There's not a match between their actions and what they say. They don't accept responsibility for what they've done, and so they are constantly blaming or making excuses and or sort of pawning off responsibilities on others. They expect to be rescued. They don't think that they should have to experience the consequences for their choices or actions.
Well, wait a minute. That's interesting. What does that look like?
So think about a teenager. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, I wrecked the car, but you should still buy me a new one. All right.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, I screwed up this presentation, or I didn't get the data and correct or whatever. And so we lost this deal, but I still should get my raise and my promotion, you know, mm-hmm, even though I didn't do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is well-meaning people often wind up sort of tag teaming and rescuing these people over time. And once you start rescuing, you are, you know, in their clutches, because it gets worse. I mean, it's not like, man, I'm short a little bit, you know, this month. Can you loan me $50? And you do so out of it, and they got a nice story to go with it. Well, for a dysfunctional person, next month it's, you know, 150 and their car's not, you know, working, and you can just keep going at a personal level. But it's also true for coworkers that somebody doesn't get a job done and you're responsible. And so you know, take a stupid looking report and you take it home and you work on it all night and make it look good. Well, you know, that is now your new role, according to them, because
yeah,
you just,
okay,
you know, took care of them. These people will wear you out. And also, again, they fog you. I mean, it's like you go into a meeting and you think, man, these guys are going to be in trouble. And you come out and they skate free. And it's like, what just happened? I mean, how did this happen? Because lots of times they're very successful at sort of manipulating information. And they're also really good at what I would call setting up, let's see you and him fight. Okay. They get it off of them and they set up a conflict between other people that distracts, and then they get away with it. Often what happens with these people is you wind up feeling like you're responsible to fix the problem that they created. and somehow they're really good at that. And it just, it's not helpful. And so you have to set some boundaries. Again, having somebody to talk things through is really helpful, but also you have to be willing to say, okay, this is what I'm willing to do, but I'm not willing to do this. You know, I'll help you out for an hour tonight, but I'm not staying up all night to fix this project because you didn't get it done.
Exactly. Exactly. Setting boundaries.
Yep. Absolutely.
Setting healthy boundaries. So mention some resources, if you would, please. Your resources and mention a few others for listeners around the world.
Yeah. So our main website is appreciationatwork.com. And it's the word at appreciationatwork.com. And there's actually a subpage on toxic workplaces. Okay. And on that, we have the ratings of toxic symptoms scale, our book, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. And then a thing that I'm really excited about, especially for workplace groups, is a training kit of videos and a facilitator's guide and handouts. It's called the Toxic Workplace Prevention and Repair Kit. It's basically a process to help you understand what makes a workplace unhealthy and what you can do to not go there. And that can either be used by sort of internal leaders or HR managers, or it's also for consultants and coaches and that kind of stuff. It hits the mark. I mean, it's just like, you know, you almost hear the moans and groans, and we put some laughter in it too, because it can be painful, but it's amazing how many people have experienced really nasty workplaces.
Yeah, exactly.
Another book that I just think is great is a book called Integrity by Henry Cloud. And the first chapter is worth the whole book. And he just shows how an integrity, not in the sense of just a moral, you know, telling the truth, but that you have integration as a person, that you're integrated, that you sort of are genuine and real. And that he uses a picture of a motorboat going down the river or the lake or whatever. And one wave is tasks and one wave is people. And a lot of leaders and people can get tasks done, but they sort of mow over people to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's other leaders that are sort of, you know, all about feeling good, make sure that nobody's upset, but they don't get stuff done. Mm-hmm. And that really a healthy leader has sort of a balance of being able to get things done, but work with people in a healthy way. So that's a great book. And he's got other resources as well.
Oh, good, good. Those are fine resources. This has been very, very illuminating as usual. We thank you for this. Any closing comments that you want to make before we sign off here?
Yeah, just to reemphasize that regardless of how bad a workplace you work in, a key variable is you. You know, John Maxwell says that 90% of life is really how you respond to it. I think that's true here. We can become victims. We can become sort of just passive, but we can affect people. And I've been impressed with, it doesn't matter where you are in an organization. You don't have to be a CEO. You don't have to be a division leader or whatever. That you can make a difference in your workplace by how you do your work and how you relate to people. That you can, you know, have a cheerful demeanor. You can focus on the positive, be thankful for the work and help they give you, and focus on that sort of honest, direct communication, and don't join the negative. And you can make a difference. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to turn the whole thing around. And at some point, you guys say, "Is this a healthy place for me?" If you feel like you're dying, if you feel like, you know, your health is going, your relationships personally are dying because you're worn out or you're negative or depressed, you got to take a look at that and take care of yourself, because if you don't, nobody else will.
Yes, well said. Dr. Paul White, as always, thank you, sir, for this illuminating conversation and for the resources that you outlined. We greatly appreciate that. Listeners know that you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com. Look up this expert interview, and you can find the highlights of the interview in the show notes, as well as the links that Dr. White has outlined for us here. I want to thank listeners across the world, as always, for joining us on our daily podcast. You know that you can go to our website and find an infographic based on an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. These are the thoughts and strategies and tactics by men and women over many, many decades, actually longer than that. And it's free. You can use it as a thought starter, a kickstart, whether you're 18 or 80. And a lot of people have benefited from this and hope you'll enjoy it. You can also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd love to have you be a part of our tribe. We're growing it and would love to know how to serve you better. In closing, Every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them and we can't ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA, if you will. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.